All right, friends, welcome back to the Mentality of Combat Sports. We've been off for like a month.
More
than a month.
Yeah.
David is David Mullins. He is a sports psychology consultant. David Mullins, MMA on Twitter. Robin Black, MMA on Twitter. And we are good friends. We have become good friends over the last year, and I haven't seen this guy in probably 5 or 6 weeks. So please forgive me if we kind of, we're going to talk about mindset. We're going to talk about the mental aspects of fighting. We're going to explore all those things that we always do. But please forgive me if we hang out a little bit as well. So how are you, man? And happy new year. And what's been going on?
Yeah, so the reason we haven't done the show in a while is because I had a baby. My wife had a baby, more
right.
like. But
yeah.
On Christmas Day. So yeah. That has been... You know, it was due January 3rd, and then Christmas morning comes, and the baby just wants to come, so the baby decides, yeah. and that's happening. So I was kind of touching on it. You just go into this bubble then, immediately. Yeah. The baby's born, bang, you're in a bubble. And
right.
And I was saying to Joanna, 9/11 could be happening outside right now. We wouldn't have a clue what's going on.
Right.
You know, not a clue. It's just this little bubble of, we've got to protect this baby. We've got to make sure this little...
Hypervigilance.
Yeah, this baby's okay. And I was noticing my brain was useless to anything other than directly related to the baby. Everything else was just useless. Like, I was trying to, you know, talk to people about different stuff, and it wasn't there. My brain was mush. But so, it's been amazing.
Yeah, I bet.
It's been incredible.
Like, and so... We start with the cliches. Your whole world is different in every priority and everything you're about.
Yeah.
That's all. It's all different.
Yeah, it's so cliche. I hate that stuff.
But
it's true. It's 100% true. Yeah.
Cliches could be just something people repeat because they've heard them, or it could be something people repeat because it's constantly true.
Yeah, yeah. Right? And this one is constantly true.
Yeah, crazy.
It really is. Yeah.
I know how you think. That type of experience, to experience that type of true tunnel vision, hypervigilance on one thing, I'm sure that's got you thinking about that perspective, that's narrowing your focus and being inside a bubble, and how that applies to
Of course, once I came out of the bubble, I started to think, reflect back on the bubble time and what it means, and that, you know, how it can be useful and not useful, and that focus, you know, it's obviously there evolutionary wise, you know, that all the different brain chemicals and the different hormones that are being released, they're new things that I've never felt before. And you can't replicate unless it's in that situation. So it was a completely new thing for me where I didn't care about anything else that was going on, you know?
So now I'm just thinking out loud the evolutionary angle of it, which must be true. I mean, if we would genetically now shift our focus to protecting the future of our genetic code. As once upon a time, as kind of a pack animal, you could do that, and the rest of us would take care of all of your
group,
other needs.
Yeah,
the group would watch out for you.
Yeah, 100%. You know? It's true. Like, the women would collect together and raise everyone's baby together, kind of thing. That's the way it would have been done.
Yeah.
So but it's different now.
Yeah, in a different world.
But so it's been very cool to notice, like obviously the baby developing every day, because every day is a huge percentage of her life. She's only 3.5 weeks old, so every day is a big percentage.
Yeah.
Plus, just I'm like noticing now starting to come back to normality from what I would consider normal with this baby as well.
Right.
So it's
a new normal.
It's a new normal. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That's what it is. But it's been an amazing less than a month so far, it's so cool to just see the growth. And plus, it got me thinking as well about this idea of, you know, born gifted, born talented.
Right.
So if that's true, my daughter is either a superstar in something or not. But that's obviously not true, because all she has instinctively is the ability to eat, like to feed and digest and sleep. And that's, you know, there's not much more that she can instinctively do. The rest of it's going to be learned as she goes on. And that got me thinking about that stuff as well.
Now you got me thinking about the idea of the sooner you learn how to learn, if you were to get better at something about learning a month earlier than some other human being who was only 24 months earlier, you are 5% ahead of them. But that will add up over a lifetime.
Yeah.
It's freaky, though. There's still, you know, Conor McGregor will march through the world saying he's just like everybody else, only more obsessed and works harder. But there are genetic advantages as well, right? You know, if you
have that left hand.
You're left-handed with a long reach. And that alone is a genetic advantage. In fact, those two things when combined are the largest combination of genetic advantages in fighting. Being a southpaw with a large reach.
And then the power, which a lot of it is, you know, there is a natural element to that as well. I mean, a lot of it is, some of it's technique and timing and stuff, but there's, you know, some guys just hit harder than others.
See, that one, I'm not 100% sure that I buy into that. And I know that the knee-jerk reaction is, well, of course they do. Some guys do hit harder than those, yes. But how we build your body, your nervous system's ability to connect different parts of your body, how we build your technique, how we build your focus.
The basic motor skills at the start, early on. Because that's one thing that I didn't know. Like, so much of this stuff is new to me now. Mm-hmm. So the baby has to do like what's called tummy time, where she lies on her tummy. Mm-hmm. And she gets her arms under her shoulders, and you know, it's just to get her neck moving, and her abdominal muscles getting strengthened, and her neck muscles getting strengthened.
Otherwise, you'll atrophy that even before
they
form.
Yeah, so you got to be, you know, it's just a minute or two every now and again during the course of the day, but she's doing that.
Yeah,
and if she wasn't, she wouldn't be as well developed in a few months from now. Yeah. So she's playing catch up a little bit. You know?
Right. And then if you are a little more developed, you know, muscularly at 8 months old than somebody else at 8 months old, you can now develop even further.
Crazy. Yeah. So it's crazy how that, you know, you can't pinpoint all these things. You just can't.
Yeah. We can't turn back time and go, oh, damn it, I wish I had more tummy time when I was a kid. but we can apply that to everything from right this minute forward.
Yeah.
Whatever you go out of your way to learn or improve now will be, you know, you will have growth on that growth 6 months from now and a year from now. And
100%.
If you wait 12 months to do it, you know, anybody who at 20 thought to themselves, geez, I wish I learned to play guitar, I'd get more chicks. At 27, they're like, ah, damn it, at 20, I should have done that.
Imagine how much better I'd be now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, interesting stuff. It is, this just shows you how incredibly nerdy you and I are. You have a child who I'm sure the moment that she was born, you were in love with, and you're still thinking about how this applies.
Well, I've started to think about it that way because of this and stuff. But it's there. That interest is there for me. I just have that natural interest. And it's not like I'm sitting at home just writing down.
Yeah, right.
Like
I'm Tiger Woods is dadding it.
Yeah, you know? No.
So this, I'm sure there's been so much that has happened in the world of fighting, much of which you have not seen because of your bubble.
A lot of it I've seen.
And so we have a lot to talk about, and we only have an hour. But there are some natural things I want to ask you about here.
Yeah.
And you have been a dad for like 23 days, so you're not an expert in it yet.
No.
But some of the natural things have started to take root. Can you imagine extrapolating this now to an athlete, a fighter, anyone who works really hard, at somebody who's driven, who has goals, whatever, and how that can change the second they have a child? And people say it all the time, now it's about this. Or, like, can you see or extrapolate some ideas of how that changes?
It's interesting you said that because, that's something I've been aware of even before, my wife got pregnant. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not going to say we got pregnant. We didn't get pregnant.
She got pregnant. The fun part. She just had to put up with that.
She got pregnant. But even before that, I've heard a few things and I've studied a few bits and pieces on fathers, especially an extra level of motivation that can come from having a kid, an extra focus and a real, like, you're not just a guy now, you're a dad, you have to provide and you have to, you know, safety is kind of, you know, on you and all that kind of stuff. So something I've been interested in, and this is boring for you, but golf, right?
Yeah.
I think it was the Masters. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was the Masters last year. It was the Masters. I was looking at the list of guys. One of the lads asked me to have a look at it, and a few of us were looking at it to put some bets on to see who would win. And I picked Danny Willett because he had just become a father a few weeks beforehand. And I thought, let's test this.
Yeah, right.
Like, I had that confirmation bias probably.
Yeah, right.
But to see if he really has that increased focus now and if he's more switched on.
Was he a top five
guy
anyway?
He'd be a contender. Well, not top 10, no. No. He was big odds, like 80 to 1 or whatever, to win it. He won it. He won the whole thing.
Now, correlation and causation
are not
the same thing.
No.
But you were looking at it for that purpose.
Yeah. So that was why I picked him, because I figured you know,
at least as a
test. He's been playing well and stuff like that. But yeah, as a little test, and you know, at 80 to 1 odds as well. But but he and it's been loads of athletes have talked about it in the past. Loads of men, especially, of when they become a father, it just gives them that extra little push to the next level. It can do. If they're embracing all of that stuff, a lot of that is natural chemicals are getting released now that weren't there before. That sense of responsibility that you have to step up your game, you know, to provide better and all that kind of stuff. So, that to me is a very interesting psychological side of it.
It's I think it depends on what your belief system is built on. I think the more educated you are over time. And the more that you understand what science is, and that you understand it is the highest level of minds studying the highest level of minds, trying to disprove the highest level of minds, if you are somebody who understands what that is, then when you can go and show a neurological or a chemical change, people see it easier than trying to explain motivation and stuff like that. When you can read and see and measure that there are changes in the chemistry of the brain, that's one where people feel like they can,
it's real. It's real. You can touch that.
Yeah, you can, exactly.
You can measure that.
Exactly, you can measure that. You can put it in a test tube and shake it around. Yeah, that's really interesting. There's, this leads me to something I wanted to talk to you about before, and it connects nicely. The idea of work-life balance for an athlete is so much, and it was something we talked about today, Ramdeen and I, when I was talking about Johnny Hendricks. And Johnny Hendricks was talking about how a big part of his life now, you know, he can't go to train at AKA because he wants to be close to his family because his wife may need him, and, you know, they got a young child, and what if she, you know, she needs to count on me and all that kind of stuff. And as people observing one of our friends, we would admire that. Oh, cool, man. You're a good father. You're a good husband. You care about that kind of stuff. But to be the highest level of professional athlete requires a certain amount of sometimes really sad and it's seemingly gross for the odd athlete or driven person, where you have to be so selfish and make sacrifices that even are, you know, don't allow you to be that good.
Yeah.
So you see a guy and you're trying to figure out work-life balance. You're working with a client and they're trying to look at that. How do you put that into – how do you figure that out? You have four children, but you want to work as hard or as focused or make the kind of sacrifice that John Jones or whoever does. How do you figure that out?
Well, one, it can be done because it's being done by lots of guys.
Right. Demetrius Johnson,
Frankie Edgar, you know, like there's lots of guys. Demetrius is a good example. Yeah. There's so many examples. Weidman, who have been at the top of the game and have families and who are active, active member in that family. You know, so it can be done. That immediately makes it, you know, something different. Than I wonder if I can pull this off. Well, you can because someone else has done it. So, yes, you can. Then it's about figuring out the details. And it gets – a lot of the sessions that I would have with guys are based around stuff like that, not necessarily around family but around time management or that balance between, you know, it might be just a girlfriend and spending time with her or you know, things –
feeling fulfilled with hobbies or
hobbies else and in your life. Hanging out with mates and different stuff.
Yeah.
So becoming efficient with your time. So it's not maybe a case of training – as much as possible. It's getting the best out of the training that you are doing. And even down to little details like preparing meals in advance for the next 3 days. And you do that again on Wednesday and then you've got yourself covered. Or one of your sponsors is one of those companies who makes those ready meals for you. So that's all sorted for you. So you're efficient there. You can have stuff, you know, you plan timing-wise where you need to be. And then work around that stuff, and it can be done. Once it takes a little bit of planning at the start, but then it can be done. And then you got to be able to adjust on the fly as well. You know, if say the baby has to go to the hospital and you got to take her there, you got to do that. So and then you got to you got to be able to mentally be able to realize it's just one session you missed, and that one session, that one training session, can't be everything. you know, because then it can start to spiral mentally if you're missing stuff and you start to feel like you're being left behind.
It really is, actually. That spiral, that must be through experience and working with somebody who helps you with those things and addressing them head on. But I've witnessed that spiral before. I've even, you know, somewhat recently, a friend who is a high-level mixed martial arts fighter, and he had some drama in the gym. That drama in the gym led him to missing a training session or two, which undermined his confidence. Then he saw a different coach and spent the whole set, I spoke with that coach, and he spent the whole session worrying about that drama and didn't train. It now became three, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, then their family members, everything they're talking about becomes this weird drama. And that's probably just due to not managing stress and not being,
That's all that is. That's more the end result of a buildup of stress than it is the start of what it seems like. The start of the stress, it's actually been happening without maybe them knowing it. And then it explodes in that way. So you got to be able to manage the demands that are there. Like, this is something a few of the lads I work with are full-time athletes and full-time, you know, either students or full-time employed, or, you know, they're asking a lot of themselves. And some of them hadn't been given themselves every chance, you know, sleep patterns were shit, and they're not getting the recovery then. They're still asking themselves to full-time train and full-time work, and you're not getting recovery time with sleep and eating crap on the way, on the go. And, you know, the stress is building then if you're not managing that stuff. So you still got to have those core fundamentals of the way you're sleeping, the way you're eating, and the way you're resting, all that stuff kind of managed still. Even with all these demands, you got to manage that stuff, because that'll filter on in a positive way then. So you'll have a positive spiral.
I got two things, thoughts from that. One is about sleeping. I want to tell you about in a second and get your feedback on it. The other one is kind of about how you, let's say that there is going to be a curveball. My child is sick, or my 16-year-old dog now I have to put down, or I got bad news about a family. There'll be spirals. We're living a unforgiving, complicated life of millions of variables. And I have a fight coming up in 10 days.
Yeah.
Can we almost like bank some extra, you know, buffer to be able to, is there a way to be more prepared for the inevitability that you're going to deal with a curveball at some point?
Yeah, I mean, something I do when a curveball comes is we discuss how it was handled and how best to handle it. And then it just reinforces it for the next time, because we know they're coming. Like, to say that unexpected stuff happens is kind of silly, because
you can expect that there'll be stuff.
Yeah, you can expect it. You can anticipate that unexpected stuff.
That's true of everyone's life. That's true of a fighter. That's true of a firefighter.
I don't know anyone who doesn't.
Yeah, it's true.
Even if it's just an injury in training
and
it causes you to miss some sessions, or you're feeling sick or whatever it might be.
Does the knowledge that happens to almost everybody, and it will has probably happened to your opponent at times in his life, and will happen to your training partner, and happen to your coach coming, does the knowledge that it's normal help?
Oh, of course, yeah. Plus, something you touched on with that example you're talking about, that fighter who he missed a few sessions and his confidence took a hit. His confidence didn't take a hit. What he thought was his confidence took a hit. Because if he was a little bit more aware of what his confidence is made up of, he would realize that two training sessions don't even register. They don't even register. Even if they're the best training sessions of your life, or the worst training sessions of your life, or you weren't there at all, it doesn't register. There's way too much data your confidence is made up of for those two sessions to have any impact at all. It just wouldn't move the needle. So if you knew that as well, that helps a little bit. Now, you don't want it to get to the point where you're just taking days off, because you can take days off. And that's never a problem with any of the guys I'm working with. Yeah. It's more a case of forcing them to take days off, making them take days off.
I spoke with Chael Sonnen the other day. Chael is a friend, and he's kind of this helpful mentor in the business of TV. Yeah. All the time. He's always kind of, he's a really smart guy. And
he gets it.
Yeah, he gets it. But we see TV very differently. And we see the job of being, you know, doing this kind of job very differently. Uh-huh. He sees, you know, when I see what he's done all week, it's everything is left with some type of headline.
you know what I mean?
And when we do similar jobs, mine would be to dig into the nitty-gritty. His would be, well, I've got two training sessions and all these 27 other things, so if I just drop a grenade here and then move on. But during those types of conversations, he was training for a fight. And the conversation got back there. But you could hear him. He was so matter of fact because he gets it over so long. He said, yeah, you know, I had a B minus session at best today, but I'm going to get a bit of a rest today and I'm going to go in and I'm going to go after it tonight. And I've got energy in me and I'm going to go have a great session. Like it was, I didn't bring it up. He just voiced it to a friend over the phone. Yeah, this was this. It's different. Tonight's going to be this.
And it'll be even better if he knows why. Yeah. That was a B minus instead of an A plus, or you know, if he understands why a little bit, and how to do something about it, then he can really have, you know, I don't want it to get to the point where you have to have two sessions in one now next time, the next session, because you got to make up for the last one and have a great one here, because that's creating a stress on yourself and you're not going to enjoy your training as much and you're putting too much on it.
Yeah.
And then it's tough then.
Yeah.
So take the lessons from it, and then you got all you need from it. So let's move on to the next one. That's that can happen too much as well. I see that with, it's especially true for that last training session, that last sparring session before a fight, where guys kind of need it to go well. Some guys, that's just superstitious then.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're making way too much out of that one training session.
Right.
That's, even if it's the best or the worst ever, you're making way too much out of it. Your confidence is made up of way more than that.
Yeah, it's one of the 6 days a week over the last 7 weeks plus the last 8 years of your life.
Yeah,
that's true. So the thing about sleep I wanted to ask you, and I kind of stumbled upon this somewhere, I don't know, and I know it connects back to journaling that you've talked about, but I notice, like, so I'm working a lot. I was here at 6:45 this morning. You know, I've got a full day here and some UFC projects and all kinds of different things. And my wife's going on tour. Erica's going on tour for 4 months.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, doing a musical.
Very cool.
Which is cool. And I always kind of, on some level, I'm like, oh, cool. Now I'll be training 3 nights a week. Now I like. So as much as I miss her, it lets me structure my life a little more selfishly. But it's our anniversary. She's going away. I have a lot of real life. And when I'm with her, I want to really be present and spend time because she's leaving. But I have the Travis Brown breakdown I'm working on, the Jorge Masvidal breakdown, et cetera. And I was bringing those home and not only being a little distracted, but not sleeping super well.
Yeah.
And I found at the end of the day, when I finish and slow down, so I don't just jump out of here and zip home, I sit down or I take a walk and I let it get quiet for a little bit. And then I go back and I just re-examine what I got done. And that's great. I'm glad I got those things done. And then I figure out what is left to do and I slot in when I'm going to do it. So now it has been assigned. So, you know, the gathering, the Travis Brown answers to what Derek Lewis does, that's tomorrow from 10 till 1. And then figuring out how to work the graphics, that's from 2 o'clock till 4 o'clock. Now it's been assigned, so I don't take it home. Like, because I'm not worried about when I'm going to do it or I guess I'm still working on it. That's tomorrow. This stuff was done today. I'm finished. That stuff's scheduled for tomorrow. Wrap it up, put it down, and go. And it's something about assigning the when and the how to something hanging over your head makes it go away for the next day.
Yeah, of course. You know? It takes away that worry and fear of when am I going to get this done. It becomes impossible. Mm-hmm. I remember that in college, especially when people have to write their thesis or lots of assignments to do. And so many people would be just freaking out, completely freaking out. By the way, they've left it to the last possible minute to start, and then they're freaking out about how they're going to get it possibly done.
And they freaked out about it while they were leaving it.
Yeah,
which just makes no sense.
But you know, it's more just a case of what do you need to do, and breaking it down to what you know when you're going to get that part done, what needs to be done first, what makes the most sense, and then just figuring out a plan for it. When you see it like that, it becomes instead of this unknown, how am I going to do it? I don't even know what it is thing. When you break it down for what it actually is, you're asking yourself to do. That's what you're doing. Then it becomes, and then you go into that next level where you figure out
the when.
When,
yeah.
Knowing that unknowns will happen, so you won't be. It won't be strict. It never is. That when won't exactly work out because stuff will come at you, but you'll have an idea of when you want to do it. then it becomes this thing that's manageable. You break it down into chunks and it becomes this manageable thing that you can actually do. Plus, and this is something I've, you know, I hit on all the time with, because sleep and rest are crucial, you know. As much as everyone talks about this obsession that an athlete needs to be at the elite level and, you know, your mind can never come off fully what it is you want to do, you kind of, it's not true. Right. It's not true even for those guys who been talked about that are obsessed.
They believe it's true even. It's still not
they
true.
Still have switch-off time. They still have the ability to relax and switch off. And to me, that time is part of getting it done, the ability to rest and recover and sleep. And you think you're not being productive in that time. You are, though. It's actually like your car, you know, you when you're driving it and you have to get from A to B. So when you're driving, you're actually making time, so you're being productive, but then you have to pull in and get gas. It's like, I'm losing time here. Well, you're not, though, because if you don't put the gas in, you won't be going anywhere. So it's the same thing with sleep. Yeah. You're kind of refueling yourself and rest and recovery.
There is some study done that connections are made in some of your ideas, especially if you are innovating things or doing creative things, when you're not focused on it. You know, so you've gathered all this information, you've done thinking and process and analysis and study. Maybe you've even brought in an outside idea that is hard to connect to this idea. They say that some of those connections are made while you're doing something else.
Yeah,
while you're
playing. Talked about that before. Yeah, I think here, yeah. Like when you're just it's happening. Like the cogs are still turning for that idea subconsciously, even though you don't know it. It's unconsciously kind of happening, and you'll have that kind of eureka moment that kind of came out of nowhere, but it didn't. It was churning away while you were walking your dog.
Another question for you, and then the reason people who watch the show know I have this here because I can't see Chase. We still have a good 30 plus minutes, which is nice. But I have a few other thoughts that I've gathered over the last while because I've learned a lot of stuff from you, and I'm always interested to hear. So you read a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you listen to books ever?
No. I listen to podcasts and I read books.
I've got into listening to books, which I've really enjoyed. One. And I get what you mean. Podcasts are a different form of sharing of information. I hope somebody's listening to this podcast right now, for example. But books are a little more organized thesis of presenting an idea to you that's been spent time to develop.
Yeah.
The free-form nature of podcasts are cool and helpful and help with creativity because you hear people working out ideas that they haven't presented. But books I like for that reason. And I started listening to books on walks to and from places, which I really like. I saw Tim Ferriss and people like that were listening to them faster. So I started listening to it on times 1.5 speed.
Oh, yeah?
So a little faster, about this speed, but no problem. You can still hear what it's saying, and it's getting to the... And once you got really accustomed to that, you can start to listen to books on times 2 speed.
Wow.
So you actually will take it in half the time. What I want to know is, am I retaining it to the same level or to a nearly... the same level, because if so, I can consume twice as much information as you could consume in that one
that
time.
Limitless movie.
Yeah, exactly. The weird part about it is once you plug that in and you start thinking about it for a bit, you're literally downloading information directly into your brain.
Yeah.
Like, you should try it. You certainly can accelerate the ability to absorb information. Now, how you retain it or if there's an amount that's too much, but what's interesting about gathering ideas from different areas is that sort of ability to start to connect things. But you should look into it. And I've tried to read some studies on it. There are people who listen to it at times 3 speed. That to me sounds a little insane.
But you can kind of easily measure, like just listen to it at normal speed.
Yeah.
And then a month later, try and remember what it was they were discussing. And then listen to stuff in times 1.5 and see. Like you could just do that experiment yourself.
True. But think of that idea that what if you can absorb, if let's say you read a book a week. So you read 4 books a month, let's just say. Well, what if you could read 8?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? In the course of a year, you would read an extra 48 books, right?
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of information.
It is a lot of information. You
know? But this kind of, so this times 10 idea that people have, or this idea of, you know, exponential growth and stuff like that. It's these kind of hacks, if this kind of thing is possible, it's these kind of hacks that make it possible. What if you really could absorb twice the information in a week, a month, a year?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You know? It's interesting. It definitely is interesting, which also brings me back to the thought I was having on the idea we're going to work smarter. Okay? So Demetrius Johnson apparently trains 18 hours a week. A lot of people train 28, but he's smarter. It's more focused. Mm. And it's been figured out and calculated and analyzed and recorded by Matt Hume, one of the great minds, as he makes adjustments and finds this is the pocket. One of the keys is the larger recovery and relaxation time. So we're smarter and we have more relaxation time. What if we could work just as smart but do a little more? Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like we're now playing with a fine. If we're going to get athletes or anyone in sort of doing anything that is somewhat competitive, if you're getting something to a fine point and you and Demetrius Johnson are equally good or close to it.
I think that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's pretty fair. I mean, you're both fathers. You're both, you know, you're like, do you like video games?
Not really.
No. Okay, well, no. He does. But otherwise, you guys are pretty similar.
Yeah.
But what if you can be just as smart and just as efficient but actually accomplish more? And that becomes the next step of the arms race.
Yeah.
You know?
There's only so much time in the day.
That's true.
So it is about training, getting the most out of your training and training as smart as possible. It is always, to me, interesting. We look back on the way people used to do things, mm-hmm. and we do it with... I remember this in the prenatal classes that we had, that we were going to. They have videos from the 80s still that they're playing to you for birth,
right.
and all that stuff, and God. Some from the 90s. And
imagine taking, like, you know, a typing course or like any actual modern technology. They just haven't bothered to make.
Yeah,
one of
yeah,
these,
exactly. They didn't bother doing it. And but and then they're adding little notes to and the sheets going around that. And disregard this completely. Yeah. This is different now.
Yeah.
You definitely shouldn't do the opposite of this part here. So they're doing all that stuff, and then everyone's kind of having a little chuckle at the way they used to do mm-hmm. things. But there's such an arrogance to that.
Right, right.
That we have it all figured out now.
Right.
They never, like, look what they used to do. Yeah. Oh, bless them. Oh, bless their hearts.
Yeah.
But what are they going to do in 10 years looking back on our stupid videos? You
100%.
Know, and that's true for everything.
And that's true of them in the 80s. They thought, you wouldn't believe what these idiots did in the 60s.
Yeah.
But that's something I was sort of, it's something I've been very interested in. Like a concept that I've been very interested in is the idea that somehow we see history as everything that came before, not as right now and 10 minutes from now and 6 weeks from now.
Yeah, yeah.
We were having a conversation today, and this is where it gets really weird, is people who analyze data. They'll be like, oh, look, here, if we look at, let's say we're looking at Fight Network videos that people watched, how much did they watch the mentality of combat sports? Well, see, in March of 2016, it was like, this isn't March of 2016. I know that's only 9 or 10 months ago, but the world is entirely different.
Yeah.
How people think is entirely different. And we will laugh at the 80s, who laughed at the 60s, but we don't think of how ridiculous what we're doing
right now
is. That's really wild.
Yeah, yeah. And it stood out for me. Just I was watching the room as they're watching the video, and everyone's kind of having that little mocking kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's true. That's true for martial arts training. It's true for everything. Mm-hmm. It really is. Plus, and it connects to something that I've been thinking about, where this idea, like, we didn't just have a baby, we're moving house as well. So apparently two of the most stressful things you can go through, we're doing them at the same time. So that's it's fun though.
Yeah.
All that stuff. But so when I'm moving house, I'm throwing out a lot of shit.
Yeah.
Because you don't realize how much garbage you have until you have to go through a move, and then you find bags and bags of crap that you can't believe made it through the last move. You can't believe why did I ever have this thing? So much of that stuff. So you're throwing it out. And it's true for our minds as well. We're carrying lots of rubbish around with us. Ideas about ourselves, ideas about the world, perceptions that we have of the world. We're carrying a lot of that stuff around.
Stuff that people told us when we were children.
Yes, exactly. So the rubbish I'm throwing out now actually used to be something useful.
Yeah.
And that might be true for the rubbish in our minds now, that it at some point was useful information, but it's obsolete now completely. And it's not even that. it's actually can be detrimental to the way we think about things. So there's so much of that, but people don't ever go through that review or that analysis, or they don't ever have to move. So they're not mentally. So they don't actually go through and figure out what am I carrying around with me here that I don't need to.
That's a really good point.
And the way I look at it, we are who we are now, right? I'm not who I was when I was 17 or when I was 25. I'm a completely different person. So and the thoughts and the way I looked at the world is very, very different now than it was back then. And that's true. Like it's easy then you automatically think about, well, there's a lot of negative thoughts that we would have that are not useful anymore, so we need to get rid of them. But it's true for some positive thoughts as well. Mm-hmm. You know, in terms of I used to be, in terms of positive things, it used to be true that I was good at football and I was quick. But that's not true now. Right. But even though when I'm playing football still, I still think I'm that 22-year-old, 23-year-old, quick, whatever. I'm not that at all now. Mm-hmm. So, but you know what I mean? It's true for everyone. And that's the example. Exactly. That's where I was going with it, is BJ Penn. Because he still thinks he's that guy.
Right.
He still thinks he's that. And he was one of the greatest fighters ever. Might be my favorite fighter. Mm-hmm. Someone I've never met might be my favorite fighter of all time. Mm-hmm. And he might always be that because of nostalgia and everything like that.
And because in that time, he was the greatest fighter.
He was innovative and he was everything. But he's hung on, and that had happened throughout history for lots of fighters. They still see themselves as that guy in their prime. That best guy they are, and that seems like a positive thing is actually negative now.
Right.
You know?
It was a positive thing.
Yeah, it was.
That swagger.
It was true.
That certainty that you were better than everyone because you kind of were or very close to it and it worked for you. Now that thing's getting you kicked to crap.
Yeah. It's not true anymore, and it becomes detrimental. There's a little bit of that with Rhonda as well. You know, carrying around information, it doesn't need to be, you know, positive, negative, whatever. Just carrying around information that's not true, that you've never taken a little chance to reflect on it. You've never questioned the source of that information. You've never questioned the time that you received it and looked back on it.
And how the world has changed around that information.
Yeah.
So the information may be exactly the same, but its relevance or its connection to the world around it has changed.
Yeah,
you know?
It is.
It really, that is a fascinating thing. But even to question what you knew, you know, you might laugh at yourself and the haircut you had in 1989, but you won't necessarily even question, you know, your thought processes or what you believed or how you viewed the world or how you viewed yourself, which is maybe just as irrelevant as that haircut.
Yeah, but some of that has made its way through into this you now. Mm-hmm. And that happens with everyone. And we never take the time to. I've been thinking about that a lot recently. It's one
That's
of those
really
things
cool.
that has been. I'm trying to figure out a way of how best to do this in terms of what are you looking to review? How do you find the things that are kind of baggage that you need to throw out now, positive or negative? Mm. How best to do that? What is it we're looking for? So I'm kind
of you're building a system of being able to audit your own your thoughts and ideas and belief systems and
where
things.
They came from
That's
the
really
sources
cool.
and all that stuff.
The system of building a system is in and of itself really a unique challenge and an exciting challenge because your first thoughts, like say somebody else's first thoughts who hasn't studied the work that you've done or been exposed to the things that you're exposed to. That knee-jerk reaction, oh, you do it like this, is almost always wrong. I don't know if I can connect this analogy quite as well as I feel it just sort of sitting here. But there's a guy at the end of my street, and he is a world-class chef. This guy is an unbelievable chef. And he was at a couple of key restaurants that became huge. So naturally, he thought, I should just get rid of all my partners and run my own restaurant, naturally, even though that's insane. And everything he did outside of the chef stuff, which he did right, everything he did was the first shit that comes to people's minds when they don't know anything about a restaurant.
Yeah.
We're going to have two different restaurant sides on the side, and we'll have this and all. I don't know why no one's ever thought of this. everyone's thought
of
it.
Thought of
but
it
once they become
better of
once
it.
They know better, yeah. They know that that won't work for a thousand reasons. The sign of somebody doing their very first MMA show and knowing nothing about it and having been exposed to nothing, they're like, and you know what we're going to do? In the intermission, we're going to have a rock band. Every single first brand new MMA promoter does that. And real people, MMA promoters and people have been exposed to it, are like, oh, for God's sake. I've seen this not work 100 times for 50 reasons. You add all kinds of stress to it and it fails. And it's the same thing. It's like you are at a point in your life. And if Duke is trying to figure out how to, or Dwayne or you know, any Greg Jackson, they're trying to figure out how to build the learning system for a new idea. They're qualified to do it. They know how to do it. And it must be really exciting. And it's a really exciting thing for you to know that something – it would be an incredibly valuable thing for an athlete or a
that's
person.
That's what, like this is. I'm not coming up with something that no one's ever thought of before. That's out there, and that's what psychology is basically. Yep. But just to streamline it a little better, so that for around performance and sports and everything like that,
well, and time
for the way, just for me, for my work, for the way I do things. Just adding in that.
Well, and
extra
time.
Level.
Let's say I'm your athlete. I mean, I can't. This has to be a small percentage of my world.
Yeah.
You have to have it streamlined to such a degree that you can get maximum value out of your time with me with the least amount of time possible, that it doesn't interfere with my ability to grapple.
Yeah.
You know what? Or put time to rest or whatever. So the streamlining of it is fascinating. But that is that optimization of today, where it is no good just to know it. It'll be over time that you're able to find the way to get the result of it. That must be a really exciting thing to work on.
Yeah, for sure it is. Like, I've had it happen recently where a few guys, it kind of naturally that new year thing. So then you're kind of reflecting on the year that's just gone by, and a few of the lads had just great years, you know, great, like the best years of their career so far and that kind of stuff. So they're looking back, and I'm talking about where that stuff has happened, and you're better now than you've been. But you need to know it as well. You've earned the right for your confidence to come up, as well as like it's true that you're technically better and physically better, and the results are better and all that stuff. But you need to know it as well. The confidence won't automatically just come up. Yeah. You need to be aware of what it's based on and bring it up to. And then I was going to that next thing where. And dispelling some of these ways you used to look at yourself, that they're not true anymore. And we have data to back that up now, real hard evidence to back that up. So you can get rid of that way you used to view yourself. It might have been true back then, you know, 2013 or whatever, 2012. It's not true now. And we know it's not true for a fact. So you can start to just feel that where it comes in. You know what I mean? Like, feel where it comes into the way you think about things, and feel it being useless and not true, and get rid of it.
But just telling them you don't have to think about that anymore is not enough.
You have
to find a way that they actually get rid of that thought, that belief, and that's the skill.
Yeah,
and that's really interesting. Yeah. Yeah, you know, Chris Weid, I don't know if you heard today.
Weidman and Musasi, great fight.
Yeah, super great.
Great fight.
Super great. Weidman has always been a really fascinating mental guy. Because going into Silva, those first fights, he was at that time seemingly bulletproof, or at least had created the perfect environment for himself to believe that this, you know, he knew that he was going to have to beat him twice. He chose not to negotiate his contract. They offered him a big contract negotiation. He said, no, I'm going to knock out Anderson Silva first, and then I'll get the real money. Because then I'll be the champion, and then they'll have one fight left on it. That, just even that dice roll, all of that. He's also, at different times in his life, identified himself as somebody who choked and then went through life and released himself of those. But this is an interesting one. Even just taking the fight and knowing that they're all tough, I have to win every position, I have to win in every situation. But it still must be it's a brand new situation. Coming first, you were the champ. Then there was one night that happened, and now there are two.
Mm-hmm.
And he's an entirely different person in an entirely different situation than he's ever been.
Yeah, but all he's asking himself to do is get ready for this one fight against Musasi. Mm-hmm. That's all he's doing. He's not trying to beat Romero and Rockhold in this one. He doesn't need to. You know,
they're not in it.
You look at that result forever and it'll always be the same. So get himself ready for this fight, this one fight. Because since we last did this, Cruz lost to Garbrandt, Ronda lost to Nunes, and a few things like that have happened, different results like that. BJ Penn losing to Ayer. Competition doesn't care what you have done in the past. Uh-huh. It doesn't care what you've done or what you could have done on that night. It's just severe and brutal is competition. It's just what did you do mm-hmm. now in this moment right yeah. here? That's all you get. So if it's true for Dominic that it didn't matter how good he had been before, and that night against Cody was better.
Yeah.
Then if it's true on the flip side too, it doesn't matter that Chris has lost his last two. And all he's asked himself to do is get ready for this yeah. fight with Musasi. So if he's honest about that fight and he can take the last few fights and take the lessons from them and figure out where improvements can be made, not just technically and physically, but mentally as well.
Mm. In performance the moment.
Yeah, all that stuff. Then, he he's putting the work in and everything like that. Then he can genuinely go into that fight confident if he's put the work in and he's taken the lessons. He can go into that genuine confident, uh-huh. not just on a roll. If he had won his last two, why should he get just automatically be feeling confident? It doesn't work like that. Competition doesn't care about that stuff, you know?
Yeah, I watch some of these guys who do business stuff, like the odd Mark Cuban thing or like these guys, and they say the same thing. They're like, the market doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
The market cares whether it's great or not these days. You know, you can't trick it. You can't lie to it. You can't deceive it. It only cares whether this is great or not. And there's a real comparison there. It's like
that's why I love sports. Like that's why I've always wanted to work in. I wanted to be one. I wanted mm-hmm. to be an athlete, and then I wanted to always be involved in somehow in sports because there is something just pure about that in terms of competition. Hmm. It's just especially there's no purer form of competition than there is in combat sports, and MMA is the ultimate version of that. It's just who's going to win this fight? You know, who's going to perform? Who's going to show up? Hmm. It's 1v1. Let's see. There's no hiding place with it. It doesn't care about what you've done in the past, how good you used to be. It doesn't matter on this night anymore. But that works both ways. Yeah. You know, coming in off a winning streak and coming in off a losing streak or anything like that. Max Holloway's on a 9-fight win streak. His 10th fight, yeah. It doesn't matter. It doesn't count.
Have you heard what he says? I'm an 0-0 fighter looking to go 1-0.
That's what you want. As long as that's true, that's
true.
Great.
It feels true.
Yeah.
I mean, I've spent some decent time around him because he's fought in Canada a couple times and spoken to him. The last time he was fighting, I didn't speak to him one-on-one. It's the nature of who gets the mic in different situations and who... but I observed him a lot. And it's certainly... He's carrying everything proper. You watch, we're thin slicing observations a lot from mm-hmm. from a perspective of having a ton of data because that's what we do. And I feel like I'm harder to trick because of that, because this is what I do for a living. And that guy seems as authentic in what he is feeling and experiencing and living as any of them.
Yeah, 100% he is.
It's pretty cool.
And he's got, and we've touched on this so many times, but he's got a new... thing now. He's got new expectations on him. He has a belt. Mm-hmm. He's technically the champion or a champion in that division. So he's got new things on him now. New expectations. yeah. New expectations on himself. Yeah. And he's coming into these fights in a different place. So he has to manage all of that stuff as well and still be that 0-0 hungry fighter that he's at his best. That's what he is.
Is there anything else, broad strokes or that was really interesting to you want to touch on that we can circle back to next time?
I'd like to do a bit next time on, we'll get back to showing some clips of stuff because I wanted to do stuff on decision making within fights. Huh. And sometimes, you don't think of that. It's easy in other sports. You think of people think of decision making, you should have passed there instead of having the shot or why did the Colts go for, why didn't they, the Seahawks against the Patriots, why did they pass, why didn't they just run it in, decision making. It's true in fights as well, though, in the moment. like that decision to go for the submission instead of whatever. You know, there's a few moments that stand out.
You need a knockout to win the fight, and there's 20 seconds left, and you go to the guy's hips and you push him against the fence, and everyone's like, "What is he doing? Like, he needs a knockout." Like that moment, it's not like you're looking at, "Oh, here's my 12 options. Which one should I choose? Yeah. I guess I'll go wrestling to the fence with all the information I have. I think that's the best one." It isn't like that.
No,
it is. It's strange, but in I will show you a little clip from a little contest that I was in, and I'll ask your opinion when we do it next time.
Okay.
And a couple of them, because there are times when it's right. And so my experience in any type of combat sport was it was rare that I was in the right mental state. And when you are, it's almost shocking how correct some of the decisions are, and things you actually haven't trained, or if somebody said, "What would you do there?" you wouldn't have the answer, and you have it in the moment. Mm-hmm. But more often, it's like, "That's the wrong choice. Oh my God, why did I do that?" And like, whereas the elite performers, they can be in that state of everything is the right choice at every moment, or seemingly. And when you have two of them in that state, that's when you see the best fights, the greatest fights ever, is because they're both there. But yeah, let's circle back to that.
There's some interesting things that come to mind and different things. Another thing, because we touched on it before with Ronda touching gloves, just to kind of come back to it, because she did touch the gloves against Nunes, right?
And that was
a lot of people messaging me about that and stuff.
Even though you said very clearly you didn't win because of it, but here we're seeing it as a sign of the state. But she seemed, again, we'll come back to this, but this doesn't seem like an issue where she was in a bad state of performance. She's got beat. Yeah. You can be in the, if I take Chase and I get him in and we get him working with you and a hypnotist and some whatever, 27 different things that we have, and acupuncture, whatever. And actually through some fluke, he is in the best state of performance he could be in ever, no matter what.
Yeah.
He's going to lose because he doesn't have the skills to win.
Yeah.
And not that hypnotists, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, I don't know why you needed the hypnotist and the acupuncturist when you got me here.
Yeah, I know. That's a good point.
But it doesn't matter. Chase
being the best shape ever, he's going to lose to Yair Rodriguez 100% of the time because he doesn't have the skills to win it. Ronda appeared in a lot of anecdotal evidence, being a great state of performance. She just can't win that fight with the skills she has in the circumstances.
And the way she went about it.
Yeah.
100%. No way. Like, mentally, she could be the best she's ever been. And if in a striking match against Amanda Nunes like that, that's what happens every single time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the look at so many people for her.
Yeah, I bet.
She touched gloves.
See, bro?
Yeah.
Even though you were very clear that this isn't. But that is the creating conversation is the gig.
The thing is, you can lose and not mentally, or you can lose and be mentally right. I've never seen it where someone has won
and been mentally wrong.
And been mentally terrible.
Yeah.
That's rare. Unless there's a massive disparity in skill level.
But that's more
what the point was.
Yeah. The 10 minutes, I'm just going to be a little selfish with this stuff. What would you say to me if I said to you that I had given something a lot of thought and I had the time because my wife is going to be away on tour and I said, I want to go and fight one more time?
Mm.
And where would you start that conversation with me?
And we wouldn't just let that be a one-word answer.
Right.
We'd get down to the real why.
Yeah.
Why of that? Is it that something you feel like that's always been there to get back? You had it in your mind to do it one more time, and it never got resolved. Do you feel like you're better equipped to do it now with the knowledge you have and all that kind of stuff?
My why is in search of experience and learning and really feeling it and being able to know more about the reality of that circumstance for this job. And I know that's a dangerous thing to do for that reason, but there are other whys, I'm sure, but that is really go in there and really eat it and taste it and experience it. But I'm not saying that's something I want to do. But let's just say that was something I was exploring, and you got the why answer that was acceptable to you to explore it
once
further.
I'd go way deeper than what you just said.
Yeah.
But if we got to the real why.
And it was one that seemed reasonable to me, and Would you want to have that conversation on here another time?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. And if you got to the point that it's like, well, that doesn't sound like an altogether insane reason, and because we may not, you might be like, oh, that's like, or I might, if a week later I'm like, well, I kind of think that, you're like, well, you're not doing it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Clearly you're not serious.
Yeah.
But if we got to that, what would you think about doing some amount of sessions if you had an athlete, let's say it was me, in this setting?
Public, like, yeah. For everyone to see?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I'm cool with that. Yeah. I'm cool with that because, I touched on this. I was speaking to a fellow sports psych, and I was speaking to someone else about this, where there's too much secrecy around what sports psychology is, and then people think it's something else. And people doing something else...
think they're doing sports psychology.
Yeah, and maybe they don't, but other people think they are.
Yeah, right.
Because nobody really knows what... exactly. A lot of people don't know what it is. So, I got no problem with people knowing what I'm doing because it's no secret.
Right.
There's no magic to it, so it's not like, oh, finally we got the secret.
Yeah, right. Now I can do it.
I can... Yeah. It's not going to be... It doesn't... Yeah. It's very practical.
Yeah.
I'd be totally cool with that.
Yeah. If you had the right athlete who was doing it for the correct why and it actually made sense and it was something real.
I've done it before a few times where Aisling Daly, they were doing a documentary on her, an audio documentary. Yep. And so they recorded a session that we were doing. Yeah.
And 99% of your clients, it is completely, you would never say who even your client was, but because
she talks openly about me. Yeah, that's why I can say it.
I think that would be somewhat interesting to do. And I think people would be interested. There's another reason people don't like to share things or show their methods, and it's because they think that their ideas will get stolen. But all ideas spread. And part of, in modern thinking, the reason, you show a breakdown or you show your skill or you do whatever is because you want those ideas to spread. If you had one single good idea in your life, you would be very, very proprietary about it. But you're going to have... it's going to push you to go for it.
Yeah, of course. And, this is going... I'm going to sound like a real dick saying this, but... even though someone else try and do it then. Yeah. You know what I mean? You have to have the experience and the knowledge and all that stuff. You can't just see it and then do it.
If you could do that, you'd be a doctor right now. Yeah. You'd be a surgeon. You'd be an astronaut. You'd be an NFL football player.
You'd go home and watch Louis C.K. or Bill Burr or the top comedians. Yeah. Go and watch their stand-up and then just repeat. Just do the exact same. Yeah. Memorize it. Do it. Yeah. You won't be as funny. You won't even be close to as funny.
No.
And so I know I sound like a dick saying that I'm talking how good I am at doing this, but it's not that. It's just I have my way of doing these things, and I'm comfortable enough doing them. I'm still getting better. I still want to improve and everything like that. But it's not just a matter of knowing it and then everyone can do it. It's not that simple.
Well, I know that a doctor, my father had a heart transplant. You cut the chest open, you cut the things, you take the heart out, you drop another heart in, you sew it up and you sew that thing up. I know that.
Yeah, yeah.
So maybe I should just go, if anybody needs a heart transplant, come and see me. I think I have it down.
Yeah.
You know? Yes. But anyways, well, by the time I see you next, which I suspect is more likely 2 weeks, but yeah, I think I'm gone next week. I'm doing Brendan Schaub's podcast.
Oh, cool. Okay.
It's going to be fun. Brendan's a cool guy. And I got some other stuff, possibly UFC stuff to do. But then we'll try to do the week after that.
Brendan's a cool guy. He's a funny guy. I like his stuff. He talks shit about sports psychology because I don't think he knows what it is.
Cool. Okay, well, Brendan, if you're watching this, that's something you and I are going to talk about next week. And if you're not watching this and somebody else is...
Because he's had experience... He's an open book, that guy, which is great.
Which is why he's so cool.
Yeah. And he's talked about seeing different people and it, being a waste of time. Mm-hmm. But that's not everyone is doing what they're supposed to be doing or is legit or is actually any good or all this different stuff or the approach might have been wrong or whatever.
If I've had 5 haircuts and they all suck, I don't say barbers don't know how to do their job.
It's easy to say with sports psychology because it is so unknown and it is so niche that and it's not widely universally accepted. So then it is much easier to do that because people aren't really sure if it is actually beneficial or not. So then the first experience with it not being, or, you know, then you throw it out.
Well, Brendan being so open is why he's an interesting guy and why he people really are interested in him and why he's so good at what he does. But I will, if he
And my wife loves him.
Yeah?
Yeah, she loves that guy.
Yeah, he's a sweet guy. I met him probably 6 or 7 years ago now, and he was really cool right from the beginning when I first met him. But it's going to be fun. But if he doesn't bring it up, I'll bring it up and ask him about his experiences with Sports Psych, and I'm looking forward to that. But so let's look at 2 weeks from now, and by then I'll try to, if this is a conversation we're still having, I'll have a why for you that makes sense.
Yeah.
And when you dig, I'll dig and try to find actually.
Yeah, that'd be cool.
All right, David Mullins, MMA on Twitter. And I'm Robin Black, MMA on Twitter. It's been really fun. We've missed hanging out with you guys. Send us any thoughts or messages or anything you want to know at all. All right, we'll see you guys next time.